This is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, Dan Friedel has an update on last week's deadly wildfires in Maui. Later, Gregory Stockel and Katie Weaver present this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Finally, we explore Alaska's Denali National Park. But first,
Hawaii's Governor Joshua Green told U.S. broadcaster CBS that the number of dead from wildfires on the island of Maui will continue to grow over the next week. Green said the search for bodies and survivors will take at least 10 days, and it is impossible to guess how many people died. He said he expects crews will find 10 to 20 bodies each day. "We are prepared for many tragic stories," Green said. At least 96 people died when a fire spread through the town of Lahaina on Maui last Tuesday. Officials said the fires moved nearly 2 kilometers per minute. It is the deadliest natural disaster in Hawaii since a huge ocean wave killed 61 people in 1960. It will be the costliest disaster since a hurricane in 1992. Green estimated the damage to be $5.6 billion. The National Fire Protection Association said the fires on Maui caused the most deaths from a wildfire in the U.S. since 1918, when over 450 died in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Firefighters were still trying to contain small fires over the weekend. Dogs trained to look for human remains helped people search the burned Lahaina area. The town was home to about 13,000 people. "They're going street by street, block by block," said Jeff Hickman of the Hawaii Department of Defense. Officials have said the area might be unsafe for some time. The fire might have released dangerous gases and made water undrinkable. People who cannot return home or those whose homes have burned will live in hotels and rental homes. Green said officials are investigating the cause of the fire. They also want to know why safety officials failed to activate some emergency signals. Green said dry weather and winds from a hurricane caused the fire to move quickly. Those in the area said they had little warning about the danger. They said the fire surrounded their homes in minutes. Some people jumped into the ocean to escape. The fire damaged power lines and reduced mobile phone service, so some people did not get messages that the fire was getting close. Warning sirens placed around the island that are supposed to turn on in case of a disaster did not turn on. "We'll know soon whether or not they did enough to get those sirens going," Green told the broadcaster, MSNBC. Some people went to a Catholic church or attended other religious services over the weekend. Akanesi Va was at a church. She said she and her family left their car and climbed a fence to get to a safe place. I think a lot of us needed to hear today's message, she said. All these ashes are going to turn into beauty. I know Lahaina will come back 10 times stronger. Scott Landis is a Christian church leader in Makena. He said about 100 people attended his services, twice the usual number. You could tell people were here looking for a word of hope, he said. Many, he added, did not know the location of friends and family. Some people sent messages on social media services such as Instagram, asking people to look for relatives. People are being found alive and severely disoriented due to what they have gone through, wrote Heather Belosis on Saturday. She was looking for the parents of her partner. Famous television star Oprah Winfrey lives on Maui part of the year. She brought supplies, such as towels, water, and personal washing products to those who are staying in a shelter. She warned that in time, the people documenting the disaster will leave, and the story will no longer be in newspapers and on television. But we're all still going to be here trying to figure out what is the best way to rebuild, Winfrey said. J.P. Mayoga is helping, too. He works as a cook at a large hotel. Now he is making meals for 200 hotel employees and their family members who have been living there since Tuesday. He said, "It is good that the co-workers can be together. Everybody has their story, and everybody has lost something, and they understand what's going on in each other's lives." I'm Dan Friedel.
The number of people entering the hospital with COVID-19 has increased in the United States since early July. The increase is similar to the past 3 summers, but with far fewer cases than before. With an updated vaccine still months away, experts worry this summer's increase in hospitalizations could become a bigger problem. For the week ending July 29th, COVID-19 hospital admissions were at 9,056. That is an increase of about 12% from the week before. But it is a lot less than the former high points. For example, there were 44,000 weekly hospital admissions in early January, nearly 45,000 in late July 2022, and 150,000 when the Omicron subvariant spread in January 2022.
Dr. David Dowdy is an infectious disease expert at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He said it is increasing a little, but it is not something to be overly concerned about. It is likely that infections are rising too, but data is lacking. Federal officials ended the public health emergency in May. That means that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, and many states no longer follow the number of positive test results. Since early June, about 500 to 600 people have died each week. The number of deaths appears to be unchanging this summer. But past increases in deaths usually follow behind hospitalizations. The amount of the COVID-19 virus in wastewater has been rising since late June across the U.S. In the coming weeks, health officials say they will look closely at wastewater levels. People will be returning from summer travel, and students will be going back to school then.
Kristen Young is an infectious disease expert at BioBot Analytics. The CDC uses BioBot Analytics to study wastewater. She said researchers are finding higher levels of COVID-19 in wastewater in the Northeast and South. It's important to remember right now, the concentrations are still fairly low, Young said. She noted that it is about 2.5 times lower than last summer. There is not one kind of variant that appears much more than others. But there is a higher number of cases from one kind of Omicron variant, EG5. Some are calling this variant Aries, but scientists are not using that name. There are a couple that we're watching, but we're not seeing anything like Delta or Omicron, Young said, talking about former variants that caused high increases in COVID cases. And genetic changes to the virus that happen naturally do not necessarily make it more dangerous. Just because we have a new subvariant doesn't mean that we are destined to have an increase in bad outcomes, Dowdy said.
This autumn, officials expect to see updated COVID-19 vaccines that contain the Omicron variant XBB.1.5. It is an important change from today's combination shots. They mix the original coronavirus with last year's most common Omicron variants. It is not clear when people can expect what officials hope is a yearly COVID-19 vaccine in autumn. Drug makers Pfizer, Moderna, and Novavax are all creating vaccines with the XBB update. But the Food and Drug Administration will have to approve the shots. And the CDC must then issue suggestions on their use. Dr. Mandy Cohen is the new CDC director. She said she expects people will get their COVID-19 vaccines where they get their vaccines for another infectious disease, the flu. She expects people will get vaccines at places like work or drugstores, rather than places that were set up just for COVID-19 vaccinations. Those places were set up early in the pandemic as part of the emergency measure. This is going to be our first fall and winter season coming out of the public health emergency, and I think we are all recognizing that we are living with COVID, flu, and RSV, Cohen told the Associated Press last week. Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is another infectious disease. But the good news is we have more tools than ever before. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Gregory Stockel.
Now, Gregory Stockel joins me to talk more about this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being here.
I'm happy to join you, Ashley.
This week's story was about a rise in COVID-19 cases here in the United States. We heard from some infectious disease experts who explained what can be done about the increased numbers. The more official word for their profession is epidemiologist. Can you tell us about what epidemiologists do and what they study?
Yes, epidemiologists are scientists and researchers who study infectious diseases that affect the public health. They are public health workers who study epidemiology, the study of how disease spreads and can be controlled.
That brings up another question. The words epidemiology and epidemic are closely related, but can you explain the differences between epidemic, pandemic, and endemic?
Sure. You will hear these three words a lot when talking about infectious diseases. An epidemic happens when an infectious disease affects many people in a community. A pandemic happens when the disease is spreading more and more and to different communities. And when a disease becomes endemic, it means it affects a community at a predictable rate and spread. Scientists now generally consider COVID-19 to be endemic.
Thanks for that explanation, Gregory, and thanks again for joining me on today's program.
You're welcome. Have a great week, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Today, on our national parks journey, we travel to the largest state in terms of land area, Alaska. Alaska is home to more national parks than any other state. It is also home to North America's tallest mountain, the 6,190-meter-high Denali Peak. The peak gives the surrounding protected area its name. Welcome to Denali National Park in central Alaska. Denali's grounds cover more than 2.4 million hectares. Within the park are glaciers, clear rivers, peaceful forests, and wildlife such as wolves, moose, bears, and sheep. Denali National Park seems huge, yet only one road goes through the park. Hundreds of thousands of visitors travel down that road each year to experience the Alaskan wild.
Denali National Park was first established 100 years ago. At the time, the park and North America's tallest mountain were known by another name. Many Americans knew the famous peak as Mount McKinley. In the late 1800s, gold miners unofficially named the peak after William McKinley, the 25th U.S. president. At the time, McKinley was still a presidential candidate. McKinley himself never traveled anywhere near the mountain, but the name stuck. In Alaska, however, locals continued to call the mountain Denali. The word Denali means the high one for the Athabascan people, many of whom lived north of the mountain. The area became a national park on February 26, 1917. Its name was Mount McKinley National Park. Some naturalists disagreed with the naming decision. A debate continued for more than half a century, a sign of the area's long and complex history.
In 1975, Alaskan state officials asked the federal government to change the name to Denali to honor the native Alaskans. But congressional members from the state of Ohio, where McKinley was from, opposed and blocked the renaming efforts. In late 1980, weeks before his presidency ended, Jimmy Carter increased the size of the park from 800,000 hectares to 2.4 million hectares. The expanded park also took on a new name. It became the Denali National Park and Preserve. The naming debate, however, was not over. Although the park took the name of Denali, the mountain itself still remained Mount McKinley for another 35 years. In August 2015, former President Barack Obama officially changed the name from Mount McKinley to Denali. The announcement was made shortly before Obama traveled to Alaska. His visit was aimed at publicizing the effects of climate change in the state.
The animals living within Denali National Park are just as famous as its tallest peak. In fact, Denali was the first national park created in order to protect wildlife. The park is home to 39 kinds of mammals and over 160 kinds of birds. Many people come to Denali to see the park's largest mammals. Some moose here weigh well over 500 kilograms. More than 1,700 caribou live within the grounds. Doll sheep flock together on hillsides. Wolves are everywhere in the park. Denali is known as one of the best places to observe wolves in the wild. Giant grizzly bears can also be seen. They enjoy catching salmon and eating wild berries in the summer. Denali also protects the remains of a prehistoric ecosystem. In 2005, geologists discovered fossilized evidence of dinosaur tracks within Denali. Tests showed the fossil to be about 70 million years old. It was the first sign of dinosaurs in central Alaska. Since then, scientists have discovered more than 300 fossil sites. The fossils preserve evidence of other ancient creatures and many kinds of plants. With each discovery, a more complete picture of Denali's past comes to life.
Adventure-seeking travelers visit Denali to climb North America's tallest peak. The first successful climb to the very top happened on June 7, 1913, when four men reached the summit. Every year, more than 1,000 people try to reach Denali's summit. Only about half of them succeed. Climbing Denali is extremely difficult. Climbers face harsh conditions and extreme weather. Winds can blow at speeds of more than 160 kilometers an hour. They must use special equipment to travel along glacier ice and difficult terrain. The Kahiltna Glacier is the longest glacier here. Climbers know it as the starting point for summiting Denali. It sees some of the most extreme temperatures of any place on Earth. Most successful climbs take about 3 weeks. Several local businesses offer group climbs.
Visitors can enjoy Denali in more restful ways, too. Many people travel by bus along the park's single road. Travel companies offer half-day bus tours. Others choose to ride bicycles along the long road. This gives them a chance to get up close to Denali's wildlife and peaceful environment. The park operates 6 campsites and offers several kilometers of trails. Denali is also home to a group of sled dogs. These Alaskan Huskies are an important part of the park experience. Visitors can watch sled dog demonstrations in the summer to learn about this traditional Alaskan way of travel.
The park's past, present, and future connect many different cultures and people across time. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.